Welcome to the BOTUS podcast. I am Jacek from BOTUS, and today I have a very special guest from the UK. His name is Dr. Hassan Magera. He's an ITI study club director in Leeds. He is active at the University of Manchester, and he is also the head of the scientific committee of the British Association of Implant and Restorative Dentistry. So yeah, hi Hassan, great to have you here today. Welcome to the BOTUS podcast.
Hello, Jacek. It's really nice to be here, and thank you for your kind invitation.
Yeah, thank you for having taken the time. So, Hassan, our listeners, I think, are very curious. Who is Hassan Magera? Can you tell us a little bit about yourself?
All right, okay. I mean, the story starts 20 years ago when I moved to the UK from my homeland, Jordan. So my parents come from Jordan, and I moved to UK to do my oral surgery training, and then I did about 5 years in oral maxillofacial surgery. And I then realized I don't like the hospital atmosphere. I didn't like the on-call chefs till midnight, long surgeries, but I had passion for certain type of surgeries, like cosmetic surgeries. And that time made me decide, right, I need to go back to private dentistry, but I want to keep in touch with surgery, and I want to pursue my passion in cosmetic dentistry. And implant dentistry was the one thing which had sort of the combination of these three aspects. So I did my master's degree at the University of Manchester, and I was lucky because I worked with Professor Marco Esposito, who was my mentor at the time. And the director of the course was also Paul Coulthard, who's a very good oral surgeon. And they both influenced my career in implant dentistry.
Okay, so today you have the possibility to work in the field that, yeah, as you said, is a passion for you in implant dentistry and cosmetic dentistry. So you're working in a private practice today? Tell us
indeed
a little bit about it.
Yeah. Indeed. After finishing my master's degree, I went back to practice, and I limited my practice since 2007 into implant dentistry, where luckily I do all aspects of implant dentistry. So I will do the assessment, I will do the patient selection, the surgical part, the temporization, and the final restorative work. So I'd like to think I offer my patients the total journey from A to Z. Mm-hmm. Now, on that point, I know lots of my surgeon friends would prefer just to place implants and get someone else to restore them. And to be honest, if I can tell you a secret, apparently, financially, it's better to do it that way. Because as a surgeon, you do your placements, you get your money and move on to another placement. But for me, I realized the most rewarding point of patient journey is to restore the cases you place yourself. And also that time helps you to reflect on what did go well and what could be improved next time. Hence, I made that decision, which is not financially driven, is to continue offering the total journey for my patients from A to Z. So, you know, and that's, as you said, it's passion for me. I work at the moment in practice in Leeds, and I also visit other practices, one of them in Ireland. I go there once a month. It's a beautiful city or village called Bilku. And the beauty there, it's a beautiful area near to Enniskillen Lake. And for me, like I practice in Bilku, which is part of the United Kingdom, but then I cross the bridge and I go and have my lunch break in Europe. So for me, that's a beautiful part of that visit to Ireland.
Yeah, that sounds amazing. So, but in addition to your clinical work that you just mentioned, you're also involved in quite a lot of educational activities. You're an ITI study club director, and you also have a leading position at the British Academy of Implant and Restorative Dentistry. Yeah, can you tell us a little bit more about that?
Okay, yes. I'm lucky to be heavily involved with the ITI. I am an ITI fellow, and I've been the ITI study club director for Leeds for the last 4 years. In fact, I'm a co-director now because 2 years ago, I've invited one of my colleagues, a very young rising star, Dr. Victoria Ivancheva, to be a co-director. So me and her sort of operate that study club. But as you've rightly said, I'm also a co-founder and head of the scientific committee, head of the scientific committee of the British Academy of Implant and Restorative Dentistry. This is an academy we started about 11 years ago, myself and Professor Marco Esposito, because we wanted to offer general practitioners who want to learn implants an opportunity to come and practice and learn clinical implant dentistry at the level expected from a private dentist without needing to spend too much time doing research or thesis and assignments. I also teach at the university, and at the moment I'm involved with two universities, the University of Manchester and the College of Medicine and Dentistry, Ulster University in Birmingham, an associate professor over there. And that's where I also supervise clinical research. So I'm lucky again, you know, because I get to teach in a private academy, and also I get to teach in the university. And for my good luck, I work with both aspects of teaching, and I get the best of both worlds, which also helped me and taught me a lot. The more you know, the more you realize you don't know, actually. So it's a continuous journey into learning and learning and never being sort of happy or settled. And as you know, implant dentistry is one of these aspects in dentistry where everything is on the move. 10 years ago, short implants were don't touch them. They're not very predictable. People were suspicious. Nowadays, for example, we know short implants are very reliable and predictable. Other aspects of dentistry, 10 years ago, people used to just use xenograft because that was the, you know, what people thought it will work, the magic powder. Nowadays, the science and the research and the clinical research tells us that you need to be making a biology-based decision on which bone material you need to use for which case. And that's the beauty of being part of this sort of educational environment. You want to teach, you have to teach yourself before, and it's a good momentum.
Mm-hmm. You just raised the topic of dental regeneration, of bone augmentation. Let's delve a little bit deeper into that. So as you have mentioned, for many decades, bovine grafting materials have been used very, very wildly in implant dentistry. But I think that there is a trend, at least in some European countries, to use also a lot of allogenic bone grafting materials. How do you see the differences between allogenic bone grafting materials and bovine bone grafting materials in terms of clinical performance?
I think it's time for every dentist to step outside this sort of dogmas and try to move on into making a decision related to that specific patient. If you come to my practice and you open the cupboard, you're going to find bovine-based bone, you're going to find allograft and even alloplast. Because, you know, dentists need to understand that they cannot use one magic powder for everything. One size doesn't fit all. You need to be studying your case. And depends on what you expect from that biomaterial, you use the one you think is going to last. We all know from very sound clinical research, bovine bone is amazing when it comes to stability. But we also know if you're lucky, you're going to get around 20 to 25% bone remodeling within the first 24 weeks. So let's say you want to do rich preservation. And this is something I used to do in the past 10 years ago. Every time rich preservation, after taking a tooth out, patient cannot have an implant as you know within the first 8 weeks, they want to wait. We used to put xenograft, bovine-based bone. And then after 20 weeks or so, or 16 weeks even sometimes, we would go and put an implant in that socket, thinking we've got high quality remodeled live bone. But in fact, if you look at the really good histology reports we have, we know that the implant is basically in bovine bone. And hence, your implant will never integrate fully. You're going to be lucky if you get 25% live bone around that dental implant. Now, yes, that 25% live bone will give you that osseointegration stability you want and even function. But let's think long term, and because this is the challenge. Every implant dentist wanting to be successful, they have two choices. Either from the very beginning, they think long term, or they have to switch their practice every 5 years and delete their old address so people cannot trace them. So it's up to you to decide who do you want to be. If you're after being well established, you need to be thinking long term. And we know these implants, which we stick them in bovine bone, they're going to have very high risk of peri-implantitis sometime in the near future, because that's not live bone. That's not full integration. Now, let's use the other scenario. Let's say you have a patient who coming to you, typical student at the university, playing sport, being hit to the front tooth came out, and they come to you. But they come to you and say, we cannot have an implant now. We need to save money for next year. What do we do? It's in the front area. You wouldn't leave it just with nothing, because you know if you leave it with nothing, there is high risk this case become too complex the year after. So rich preservation would be a very good indication for this case. But you need to choose which bone material I'm going to use for this rich preservation, which I would expect to place an implant after 1 year. If you go and use allograft, because you think allograft is the magic powder for everything, 1 year down the line, I promise you, you're going to get good quality bone, but very little of that. Hence, I would go for xenograft, because after 1 year, I'm going to get the stability I want, and I will have higher percentage of that bone remodeling into live bone. Mm-hmm. So that's what I meant. You ask yourself, what do you expect from that bone material? And accordingly, you decide what bone material to use.
Mm-hmm. So let's maybe delve a little bit deeper into the different materials that are out there. So if I understand correctly, when you have a case, for example, in the aesthetic zone where you're looking for a very high stability, you would use a xenogenic bone grafting material such as Cerabone, right?
That's a very good point. If I may say, depends again. Is that xenograft going to touch my implant surface? I don't like that. Following the ITI guidelines, we prefer to have autogenous bone covering the exposed threads of your implant. So let's say you're placing an implant in the anterior zone, you would expect to have some sort of dehiscence or fenestration if you place an implant within the correct prosthetic envelope. Okay? That's why I tell my younger colleagues, if you place an implant in the anterior zone, 97% of the cases you will need to use GBR in the anterior zone. Okay? Now, you might decide to put soft tissue graft, but what I'm trying to say, 97% of the cases, your implant going to have exposed threads. Hence, we need GBR. Personally, I would like to have autogenous bone covering the exposed threads. But if the defect is so big and I don't want to put my patient through the trauma of a second surgery, then I would like to use something on the exposed threads, which gonna remodel quickly with high predictability into live bone. And that's when I will use max graft cancellous particles or even cortical cancellous particles, which is an allograft. Or in countries they cannot use allograft, you could use alloplast max resorb, because both of them gonna transfer into good quality bone. But what about the second layer? The layer which I want to give me that nice convexity. Because without that labial convexity, The tooth gonna look fake. So if you want to get a successful case, you really need to mimic nature. And nature in the anterior zone tells you, you should have that labial contour, convex. Hence, I would go for Cerebon, because Cerebon is the xenograft bone which will give me the best stability on the long term. And what do I mean by that? I have used many other xenografts on the long in the past. And why do I choose Cerebon over the other popular xenograft in the market? Because if you go into the fine details how they make Cerebon, Cerebon is a xenograft which is heated to very high temperature, which means it's going to give you the longer stability compared to other grafting material. The other thing I like about Cerebon, it's hydrophilic. And hydrophilic, that's been tested, and I'm sure if you go and put YouTube, you can find the difference between Cerebon and other xenograft materials and from hydrophilicity point of view. Now, hydrophilicity, it's amazing to attract blood into the bone, which gives you better healing on the long term. But as a clinician, hydrophilicity also makes it so easy for you to manipulate that bone. If you look at my Instagram and Facebook, sometimes I put some clinical cases, and you will always notice how I like to build that convexity. And I take pictures of that. So I build the convexity and I go to my nurse and I say, take that picture. And I promise you, that picture you see on Instagram, usually it's trial number 5. Because sometimes the angle of the camera wasn't right, or the photo, the light wasn't right. But because Cerebon is hydrophilic bone, that convexity is maintained even for 3-5 minutes. I've used other types of bone where after 30 seconds, the bone starts to spread right and left, and you start to try to collect it from everywhere. And you know, it's a nightmare. You lose that convexity. So being hydrophilic makes it much easier to manipulate that bone. And that's another sort of handling advantage. Mm-hmm. Now, recently, I've started to add some max graft with Cerebon to my second layer. Because I'm thinking, okay, Cerebon is amazing with that stability. But wouldn't it be nice to add something within the xenograft to help it to turn over quicker? And I know I don't need to have 100% Cerebon for that stability, because it's such an amazing xenograft. So I've started going into 50-50 mix for my second layer. Now, this is a technique I've started using 3 years ago, and obviously we will have to wait longer time to approve that technique or not. But personally, my gut feeling and my biology understanding tells me autogenous as a first layer, or something replaces autogenous, which is going to be max graft or max resorb. And my second layer nowadays is a mix between max graft and my Cerebon. What I wouldn't recommend is what some people do. They mix Cerebon with autogenous, or they mix Cerebon with max graft and just use it as one layer. You will still get xenograft particles touching your implant surface, which if you think about the biology concepts, you know that this is not the best thing to do for your dental implant.
So if I understand correctly, Hassan, your message also to the clinicians out there is to be very aware of the biology, of the biological factors, and of the properties of the different bone grafting materials when you're doing surgery. Is that right?
100%. I have one of my fantastic maxillofacial mentors, Professor Sanjit Kareem. And he's very focused on the fact that if you're going to use a product, you as a dentist, because every dentist is a medical doctor somehow, you know, you treat part of the human body. You need to understand the biology of that product. So imagine my friend and the nice colleagues listening to this. Imagine if you go to the doctor and you need to have a tablet for anything you need, and go to the doctor and the doctor say, take that white tablet. And you go to the GP and the doctor say, what is it made of? And the doctor say, I don't know. They just said that white tablet will do the job. Would you trust that doctor? The same thing, you know, you cannot just follow what Facebook tells you or what the salesperson tells you. Every dentist has a duty to go and understand the biology of that biomaterial and then decide when to use that biomaterial.
Thank you very much, Hassan, for all of those insights. We are now going to take a break, but we will soon be back with the second episode of this podcast. So to all our listeners, stay tuned and don't miss the second episode of this podcast with Dr. Hassan Magera.